2 weeks ago, Dr. Angelo Tremblay gave a lecture in Ottawa on the ways that we can deal with obesity in 2011. Now, Dr. Tremblay is one of the most published researchers in the field of obesity. He's actually ranked fourth all time in terms of obesity-related publications. And he talked about a number of different factors related to obesity. Now, in the next 5 weeks, we're going to play this lecture in five parts. So today, we're going to play his first section of the lecture, where he looked at the relationship between sleep and obesity, and how promoting a better night's sleep can actually help improve body weight maintenance. So thanks, first of all, to Dr. Angelo Tremblay for very kindly allowing us to record his lecture, and for also providing us with the PowerPoint slides. And thank you to Dr. Jean-Philippe Chaput for facilitating all of this. So if you're listening to the podcast in iTunes, you can come to our website, blogs.plos.org, to see the entire presentation with the PowerPoint slides. And I will be putting one up every week for the next 5 weeks. And if you're already on the blog, then sit back and relax and enjoy the slideshow. Here we go.
Merci beaucoup, Jean-Philippe. Thank you much for the invitation, the opportunity that is given to me to be with you today. Thank you, too, for the support to this presentation, since JP provided the title. He told me, what do you think about this title? So I said, okay, I will deal with that, and I will try to provide a creative answer. So he also told me that this presentation would be given in the context of a lunch and learn opportunity. So I wish you bon appétit, and I hope that the scientific content will be interesting. So when we ask a question pertaining to how do we do to reach an optimal prevention in health-related fields, the preoccupation is always the same. We have to better understand in order to better intervene. If we don't know what we do, if we do not know the determinants of the problems that we are dealing with, it is necessarily problematic, and we have to to do something, we have to to be proactive without radar. So to some extent, a better understanding is also a key for successful prevention. You see the skeleton of my presentation? So I will draw attention on some on less suspected issues as potential determinants, without, of course, without considering that the traditional determinants of obesity are also important. So let's start with the main study of my career that was initiated in 1977, after I was on strike. Nobody in the audience maybe knows that during the fall 1976, all the professors in Laval University were on strike. So this is the context in which I began my career. And at the beginning of the new year, when I was back to work, I had the opportunity to work with Professor Claude Bouchard, who implemented this study, which is still useful today to document the genetic determinants of obesity, but also environmental determinants including some of them that we were not considering as potential determinants 30 years ago. So, with Jean-Philippe, before he quit for his postdoc studies in Copenhagen, we decided to determine the palmarès de l'étude des familles de Québec, the hierarchy of factors contributing to the risk of overweight. So you see on the lower part of the slide the traditional determinants that I was considering. So I was used to work in relation to vigorous physical activity. It is indeed a risk to be overweight, be it in a cross-sectional context and also in a longitudinal investigative context as well. I was also focusing 20 years ago on the impact of high-fat diet on the risk of overweight and the control of appetite. It is also there. High alcohol consumption was there also, but the leaders, the factors being on the podium of the predictability of overweight, were non-caloric factors. Short sleep duration, high disinhibition eating behavior, and low calcium intake. So this is important to consider in a context where prevention is important. If you don't take that into account, the actions that will be implemented to prevent might not be optimally targeted. So, a few words about adequate sleep. In our field, the leader, I believe, is a scientist from Belgium working in Chicago, Eve Van Cotter. Her group are sleep specialists. I think in French we say somnologue. In English, I think it is not dermatologist. That would be so amusing. So let's say sleep specialist. And when they published this paper several years ago, we already had information in the literature, in the epidemiological literature, documenting a risk, a relationship between short sleep duration and the proneness to overweight. But it happened what is frequently happening when we deal with epidemiology, when there is only statistically significant correlations as being part of the proof of concept, there might be a lot of individuals being in the category of non-believers. So it probably happened in this field as well. And we had to weigh this nice laboratory demonstration in the context of which people like you and me were tested under normal sleep conditions or under sleep restriction, 4 or 5 hours of sleep per day. And in this case, these investigators, also being preoccupied by appetite control and metabolic health, documented these changes. So short sleep duration impose a significant reduction of leptinemia. Leptin is known as an anorectic messenger. An increase in ghrelin, which is a hormone known to promote an increase in food intake, in desire to eat. So if I ask you what is happening when anorectic hormones decrease and when orexigenic hormones increase, you inevitably feel more hungry. And this is specifically what they observe with their quantification of appetite sensations. So we did not need more to rush towards the data bank of the Quebec family study at the time of the beginning of the PhD studies of Jean-Philippe to look at the possibility that some sleeping treasures be found in our data bank, and that would contribute once again to the Quebec family study, the possibility to contribute. So we published this paper in Obesity 3 years ago, and the message is clear. The short sleepers in this case are heavier compared to the normal sleepers, maybe the ideal sleepers. And if we are looking at their body fat mass, the contrast is rather substantial. 6 kilos of body fat difference between two subgroups is rather quantitatively important in this type of study. In the Quebec en Forme project that was granted by the Fondation Chagnon, which was created when Vidéotron, a cable company in Quebec, was sold to Québécois Media after having almost been sold to Rogers AT&T. So they created the fund. We had money. We had access to the preliminary data of the project. And we showed that in young boys, there was a significant relationship indicating that the short sleeper was at greater risk to be overweight compared to the good sleepers. And the main contribution of this paper is found here in total accordance with what we saw in the Quebec family study. Again, we have a hierarchy of predictability of the risk of overweight. We consider 5 factors which are known in epidemiology to be habitual predictors of the risk to be overweight. And so we have low familial income, low parental education, parental obesity, sedentariness, long TV viewing, and we added short sleep duration. Again, as we say in French, une image vaut mille mots. So a picture is equivalent to 1,000 words. So every factor has a significant predictability of the risk of overweight when compared to the reference probability of 1. But again, there is a winner in terms of high predictability, short sleep duration that is dominating all other factors in terms of significant risk to determine the proneness of overweight, the risk of overweight in children. So the story continued, and recently the laboratory still contributed, and in this case, a study that was performed in France by Laurent Brondel, and they used again about the same methodology as the Van Cotter group. So normal sleep duration, short sleep duration, so restriction, and after each condition, ad libitum energy intake in the lab, a very strong contrast, an hyperphagic effect of short sleep duration of more than 500 kcal per day following sleep restriction. So quite important, and also maybe a small effect in favor to fat preference in response to short sleep duration. With respect to physical activity, again very recently published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So short sleep duration versus normal sleep. Here we see a reduction in participation in vigorous activity immediately after the restriction. When they perform a daily follow-up, you see that subjects are less active and they are also more tired. So if we wish to prevent, we must take into account sleep duration, sleep quality as well, which is now under investigation by sleep specialists. And for the physician, I believe that it must be included in the logbook of interview with your patients. One question is sufficient. How many hours of sleep do you generally take under habitual conditions? If the answer is 5, you will say, oops, there is something there that might be an object of recommendations and maybe follow-up as well.
So that was part one of Dr. Angelo Tremblay's lecture on ways that we can deal with obesity and the obesity epidemic in 2011 and beyond. Now, if you have any thoughts or comments on this lecture or on anything else on our podcast, we'd love to hear from you. You can visit the blog at blogs.plos.org. Don't forget, you can also subscribe to us in iTunes to get all of our podcasts delivered directly to you. And if you are listening to us in iTunes and you'd like to give us a rating in iTunes, that would be greatly appreciated. So thanks once again for listening, and next week we'll be back with part two in Dr. Angelo Tremblay's lecture in ways that we can deal with the obesity epidemic in 2011 and beyond.